From KQED Public Radio, this is the California Report. I'm Rachel Miro in for Scott Schaefer. On today's show, neighborhoods across California go to seed as homeowners foreclose and banks let the homes deteriorate.
Okay, so we board and secure these houses, and then what? You know, and then all it does is just, it's still blight because now you have people living next to boarded houses.
And in Baja, California, a little beach town struggles to pull out of a slump in American tourism.
This was the worst year in all the years, and I hope this summer or starting this next week, things will get better. Otherwise, it might come to the point I would have to close this store because it's just too difficult.
Those stories plus a little Olympic uplift from gymnasts in San Jose and intoxicating saxophone solos to set you down easy. It's the California Report. Californians' already obsessive interest in real estate is reaching a fever pitch as property values continue to slide across the state. On today's show, we deliver two very different takes on the housing shakeout. First, a look at foreclosures. California is home to four of the nation's top 10 metro areas in terms of foreclosure rates: Stockton, Riverside, Bakersfield, and Sacramento, according to RealtyTrack. All these vacant homes are creating some big problems, as reporter Tamara Keith discovered when she tagged along with a Sacramento County code enforcement officer.
Thanks to foreclosures, Norcade Circle has become a pocket of urban decay. Of the 60 properties in this U-shaped block, 20 of them are in foreclosure. Code enforcement officer Jose Mendez leads me to an alley behind a row of vacant brick and stucco fourplexes. It's a mess, littered with trash and mattresses, even though there are virtually no residents left on the block. All of these homes have been boarded up by the county to prevent transients, vandals, or thieves from getting in. Mendez approaches a doorway, and he doesn't like what he sees.
This should have a lock on it, and it looks like they... somebody's already attempted to break into it. And see how they've unscrewed this already, too? Actually, there you go. And just to go inside, go ahead.
Inside, the place is wrecked. The sheetrock has been ripped off the walls. Copper pipes for plumbing and electrical wires have been cut out by someone looking to make a profit from the valuable metal.
There's evidence of someone staying here. You have clothes. Usually you'll find a mattress. Sometimes you'll even find them sleeping in here.
Well, it smells sort of like human waste in here.
And yeah, it does, right. So they're probably defecating in here somewhere.
Was this place livable at some point?
At some point it was. And a lot of these actually looked like they were nice places at some point. And with the vandalism and with these people squatting in them and vandalizing them, I mean, at this point now, they're not habitable.
Since November, Sacramento County code enforcement officers have dealt with violations at more than 90 foreclosed homes. These homes had broken windows or other health and safety hazards. It's code enforcement's job to make owners address the problems, but it's a constant struggle. Next, Mendez and I drive to what is probably the worst neighborhood on his beat, a string of three blocks in a low-income section of South Sacramento, where boarded windows are everywhere and residents are hard to find.
That one's owned by the bank, that one's owned by the bank, that one's owned by the bank, and then it goes on to that one. So all of these here are owned by the bank or foreclosed on, and there's just issues, all kinds of substandard issues inside.
Getting out of his county-issued Chevy Malibu, Mendez is greeted by Sophia Jones, a tenant in one of the foreclosed homes.
How you doing?
Good, how you doing?
Good, we moving on Monday.
Are you really?
Yeah.
A few weeks back, Mendez broke the news to Jones that she had been paying rent to a landlord who no longer owned the home. Then she says she got a letter in the mail.
Look, it said, "Dear occupants at 750 GG Place, as you may or may not be aware, EMC Mortgage Corporation has taken title of the above noted property."
Jones says she's going to spend the rest of the day packing now that she's found a new place to live for her and her five kids.
We're out of here. Thank you, Jose, okay?
Good. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You call me if you need anything.
Mendez is still in the neighborhood when he gets a call from a Sacramento County Sheriff's deputy.
Hey, Bob, what's going on?
They meet up with three other officers at a foreclosed property, this time in a middle-class section of Sacramento. When the deputies burst inside, they find a man, a transient, barefoot and so intoxicated he can barely talk. As he stands handcuffed in the living room, the man spits on the floor.
I just came over that night and I don't know where to see.
There are food scraps and cigarettes scattered around, and signs of the family who used to live here. A child's room with decorations on the wall. A calendar hangs frozen in January, the month the home was turned over to the bank. Sheriff's Deputy Bob White says having an empty home like this is an invitation for trouble.
We've had numerous citizen complaints in the neighborhood regarding people squatting in the house, and have had a few arrests out of the house for various drug-related offenses and other things dealing with the homeless that are here.
Jose Mendez begins taking pictures and documenting code violations so he can build a case for boarding up the house. Driving back to his office to file a report, he shares his frustrations.
Okay, so we board and secure these houses, and then what? You know, and then all it does is just, it's still blight because now you have people living next to boarded houses.
Mendez says for the most part, the banks that own these boarded up and damaged properties don't seem willing or able to step up and take care of them.
You don't have anybody that's calling you back. You don't have anybody responding to your requests or to your notices. Unfortunately, with these foreclosures, nobody wants to deal with your issues. Nobody wants to deal with your requests.
That's not how the banks see it. Dustin Hobbs with the California Mortgage Bankers Association says lenders don't want blight to drive down property values, but he says they're stretched in every direction.
The bottom line is that lenders are making an unprecedented effort to solve an unprecedented problem. The volume in homes that need attention and need to be resold that have been foreclosed on is at record levels.
And because of that, code enforcement officers like Jose Mendez are having a hard time keeping up. Before the foreclosures became a problem, he says there were maybe one or two complaints about vacant properties in a month. Now, in a very different housing market, it's as many as 10 a week. For the California Report, I'm Tamara Keith in Sacramento.
We've got pictures of looted homes. You can find them on our website, californiareport.org. There's grim news on the home construction front, too. New home starts dropped in February. Building permit applications in the state were down by 28% compared to the same time last year. More than 69,000 people who work in construction lost their jobs last year. But California's a big housing market. Caitlin Carroll reports there's plenty of work to be had in home remodeling.
The machines at Gabriel McKegney's woodworking shop in San Juan Capistrano run at a steady hum these days. McKegney walks over to a partially carved piece of wood. It's lying on the table under a medium-sized drill.
This is computerized carving, so it's a router that's driven by computer programs.
McKegney programs his designs into a computer-run machine that then carves out the rough contours of a decorative inlay for a hearth.
And after that, then we take it over here and we do through hand carving on top. It's just a faster way of doing it. It's a more efficient way.
McKegney needs that kind of efficiency to keep up with current demand. He began his business Architectural Furnishings by Tempo about a decade ago. The five-person team produces ceiling tiles, handrails, cupboards, and more. The company scraped by for years. McKegney says, surprisingly enough, the orders picked up as the housing market took a dive.
Well, we didn't benefit from the boom because we were busy developing our business and we're not concerned greatly with the recession for two reasons. One is I've been in a recession for most of my life and this is not a recession compared to where I come from. And secondly, actually, is that we produce products that are now attractive and affordable even in a tougher marketplace.
Growing up in Northern Ireland may have prepared McKegney for tough economic times, but it's his business savvy that's kept the company afloat. McKegney's use of computerized carving and recycled materials keeps his costs low.
It's so difficult manufacturing furniture in Southern California or in America anymore that the only way we're able to do it is because we have automated and we have this faster system of producing parts. And that's allowing our small shop to still keep producing nice ornamental pieces.
A stop at a busy Home Depot east of downtown L.A. suggests McKegney's shop isn't the only one humming these days. Contractor Ian Messett's loading up his truck with wood to build a new addition for a client's home. Messett says his phone's ringing with job offers.
It has slowed down. I think people aren't building as much as they were. But for the remodel stuff, it hasn't affected my work at all.
A few car rows over, Cindy Stewart is unloading soil and flower pots into her trunk. She says the flowers are just the beginning of a facelift for her home. She plans on investing $70,000 on new landscaping, an updated kitchen, and a bathroom.
You know, I have a lot of equity in my home, and rather than strap myself with a new home, with a million-dollar home, might as well stay in the home that I have that has a lot of equity and improve upon the home itself. And that way, the value goes up, my quality of life improves. It's really the way to go.
Professor Dolores Conway from USC's Lusk Center for Real Estate says Stewart's plan is smart. Bathroom and kitchen remodels tend to recover their value. And if you're looking to invest in your home, the market's in your favor.
There has been some easing of construction costs. You know, contractors are looking for work. So, you know, they're willing to negotiate a bit more than they were, say, when the housing market was just so active.
A recent study out from real estate website Zillow.com shows 82% of homeowners plan to spend the same or more this year on minor home improvements. Gabriel McKegney knows this is the moment to secure the foundation of his company so he can weather the industry's future booms and busts.
I often think when I'm having hard times here, I didn't come 6,000 miles not to be successful. And I didn't come away from living with my parents and not seeing them every day in order not to be successful. You know, you have to have a real gut reason why you're doing something in order for it to work.
McKegney's gut hasn't steered him wrong. He expects to bring in $1 million worth of business this year. For the California Report, I'm Caitlin Carroll.
This weekend, 400 gymnasts from 14 countries are competing at San Jose State's Event Center in the Pacific Rim Gymnastics Championships. It's a rare chance for Californians to get a close look at elite athletes from around the world. Paul Hom, who took home Olympic gold in 2004, is the obvious headliner in the men's events. But fans are also here to see young up-and-comers, like Glenn Ishino of Huntington Beach. He's headed to UC Berkeley in the fall. But first, there's this weekend. Some 7,000 to 9,000 people are expected to pack these stands during the competition.
It's definitely intimidating, but we gotta do it.
In the last few days, have you seen anybody in particular on any particular piece of equipment where you just think, wow, that's the standard to meet?
I'd probably say Paul Hom on pretty much everything. He's amazing. I'd say his technique and execution's just perfect. Everything's on cues. Right to handstand, everything that's needed to be done is perfect.
The Olympics, is that where you see yourself headed?
Hopefully in 2012.
He's not the only one to hope so. Ishino's placed well in recent competitions. Last year, he won a position on the U.S. junior national team. Miles Avery is the head coach for Team USA. When he's not coaching Buckeyes at Ohio State and Paul Hom. Here's how Avery would describe Ishino to people who don't follow gymnastics.
Very artistic. I think if you look at on our team, Alexander Ademev, in terms of you see the clean lines and the execution, I think Glenn is of that same mold.
Avery keeps one eye cocked on the team, stretching just a few feet away, while he says Ishino's got a few more years before he'll be ready for the Olympics.
That's why the juniors are here competing with the seniors, to gain some of that valuable experience, to see how the seniors do it as well. I think that's the biggest thing for those juniors to be here, to be right alongside of the world-class, Olympic-level athletes, because that's their dream, too, to be in the Olympics, to be in a world championship.
11:30 to 11:55, Japan.
Around the room, teams move in rotation. Right now, they're just running through drills, saving the good stuff for the competition. Over on the mat, Canadians cartwheel in a clean line, one right after the other. One Chinese gymnast demonstrates on the vault why his team is considered the one to beat in Beijing this summer. Over on the pommel horse, an Australian demonstrates good form in front of one of his countrymen, also warming up, to judge the competition this weekend. As the gymnast twirls his body in a blur over the pommel horse, Brian Wade's hand moves in a blur over a sheet of paper, jotting down a kind of gymnastic hieroglyphics. We whisper to avoid breaking the athlete's concentration.
They need a certain number of difficulty skills. What we've got is this thing called a code of points, where it describes every single skill as individual components. These A1s are the easy skills that goes up in difficulty, F being the most difficult skills. So it's a pretty complex scoring system.
I presume that you used to be a gymnast yourself?
Used to be, yeah. It's many years ago now. Finished in about 91. So, and I guess that's where my judging sort of came from. Yeah. But there's a lot of theory involved. Plus then you need to know every single one of these skills and values off by heart. And there's over 1,000 skills.
Is it pretty much the same as when you were competing?
The skills have definitely got harder. You see kids doing stuff that I wouldn't even dream about doing.
Which is what makes them so impressive to watch. For those who can't make it to San Jose, NBC Sports plans to televise the competition on April 13th. Business has been bad in Baja, California, but tourism officials have high hopes the tide will turn this spring. Last year, a lot of American tourists shied away from Mexico because of long waits at the border, drug-related violence, and the weak U.S. dollar. KPBS reporter Amy Isaacson profiles one beach town struggling to come back to life, Rosarito, just south of Tijuana.
On Rosarito's main tourist drag, T-shirts, hats, and refrigerator magnets line the shelves of Janet Hernandez's souvenir shop.
It's mainly so people can take something back that says Rosarito, but just some kind of souvenir.
The gleaming white-tiled store is sandwiched between bars with big outdoor patios, restaurants advertising lobster deals, and other shops that sell trinkets for tourists. But about the only merchandise moving at Hernandez's store are the Mexican jumping beans next to the cash register.
This was the worst year in all the years, and I hope this summer, or starting this next week, things will get better. Otherwise, it might come to the point I would have to close this store because it's just too difficult. I can't keep taking out of my savings to support a store.
Hernandez recently shut another shop she owned next door after 19 years in business. Business owners in Rosarito estimate their sales up until the start of this spring's tour season were down about 50% compared to last year. And 2007 wasn't particularly strong to begin with. About 1.5 million fewer tourists visited Baja California compared to 2006. That's a big hit for Rosarito, where 70% of jobs are tied to tourism. Long border waits at what's the world's busiest land border, and the economic downturn in the United States may be keeping people away. Also, visitors are worried about crime and corrupt cops. Hernandez says she heard complaints all last summer.
Police after police after police stopping people for money. They even stopped me. And then the next day he came and he said to the girl that works for me that I stopped the lady. And since I stopped her, she said I could come in the store and get anything I want. And so the girl said, you better come back when she's here. He never came back.
On top of the extortion complaints, there were also a few serious attacks on tourists in Tijuana and Ensenada last fall. That's unusual. Most violence in Baja California stems from Mexico's war on drug cartels. It's dramatic, but tourists are rarely targeted, and the shootouts typically don't happen in tourist areas. Nevertheless, Baja California's tourism officials worry visitors don't know the difference. They see the headlines and think it'll happen to them. Rosarito Mayor Hugo Torres expresses the sentiment of many local and state officials when he says the U.S. media has fueled people's fears by repeating border crime stories ad nauseum.
They have covered the facts, but they have overly displayed them in the front pages. It should come out, it should be told, it should be told in a positive manner because we are doing something. We're not sitting down or ignoring that there's crime going on.
Indeed, law enforcement throughout the border region has recently scored some major hits against organized crime. Also, police say extortion complaints have plummeted since tourist police who speak English and federal agents have been deployed to help out. It's too soon to say if it's all working, but there are some encouraging signs. Baja California's Secretary of Tourism announced earlier this week that visitor numbers for the first 3 weeks of spring break were about as high as last year, and he says on average each visitor spent $7 more than in 2007. At an open-air restaurant called Macho Taco on Rosarito's main street, Shelby Young and Ryder Piper are bellied up to the bar. They've come from Arizona for four nights.
Do you want a beer?
Sure.
Can we have two beers?
Shelby's in a bikini, Ryder's wearing trunks. Ryder says they heard about violence in the border region before they came.
My dad was watching the news and he was seeing like kidnappings done by people who are dressed up as police officers and stuff, and just seemed pretty unsafe.
And how come you still decided to come after hearing that?
Because it's spring break. Just try and stick together as much as we can.
There's dangers everywhere you go. You can't just stay at home.
That's the message Baja California tourism officials hope to communicate. They recently hired a crisis management firm to launch a $500,000 PR campaign to help resurrect the state's image. For the California Report, I'm Amy Isaacson in Rosarito.
In the years just before and after World War II, California teemed with independent record labels that thrived by producing singles for jukeboxes. Each served as a kind of public iPod in those days. The latest album by the Bay Area's Rova Saxophone Quartet was designed with a jukebox in mind, but not the kind you'd find in a corner bar. Our jazz critic Andrew Gilbert has a review.
Alan Lomax, the tireless musicologist, traveled the world making field recordings of music from people's daily lives. Rova Saxophone Quartet, the Bay Area ensemble with a three-decade track record of intrepid experimentation, might seem to exist in an entirely different realm than Lomax's subjects. But Rova's baritone saxophonist John Raskin composed the jukebox suite as a tribute to Lomax's spirit, a wide-ranging sensibility in which styles separated by time and distance collide and intermingle. Raskin spins various musical sources into improvisational gold, not so much borrowing directly as weaving together seemingly disparate strands into a glorious sonic tapestry. The album's opening track, Jukebox Afro-Balkan, sets the agenda beautifully. Besides Raskin, Rova features Larry Oakes, Steve Adams, and Bruce Ackley. The quartet is grounded in the expansive textures and open-ended structures of avant-garde jazz and new music, while also drawing on an international array of popular and traditional genres. What's unusual about the jukebox suite is its extended melodic invention, a creative facet the group explores too rarely. On the seductive jukebox choro, Raskin conjures the spirit of Pixinguinha. The Afro-Brazilian saxophonist and composer crystallized the intricate instrumental style in early 20th century Rio, and Raskin's piece captures choro's intoxicating mix of playful virtuosity and urbane sophistication. Not every piece is inspired by music. On the haunting jukebox hang-up, Raskin's buzzing minimalist score is dedicated to pioneering German-born American sculptor Eva Hesse. With its long drones and slowly diverging lines, the piece offers a few minutes of reflection in the midst of the lyrical flights. The album's longest track is also its most surprising. The 10-minute Jukebox Detroit is dedicated to the alt-rock duo The White Stripes. As Raskin's burly baritone sax surfaces again and again to provide a predatory groove for Larry Oak's rollicking tenor sax, the piece evokes the Stripes' stripped-down elemental sound. Encompassing nearly four dozen albums by the quartet, and many more by the saxophonist side projects, Rova's musical universe is vast and wondrous. With its unified feel and passionate lyricism, the Jukebox Suite is a welcome addition to Rova's ever-expanding repertoire.
Andrew Gilbert is a San Francisco Bay Area writer who covers jazz and world music. He reviewed the Jukebox Suite by Rova Saxophone Quartet. And that's our show for today. The California Report is a production of KQED Public Radio. Our director is Susie Racha. Seal Muller is the technical producer with additional engineering from Tom Krimkowski and Howard Gelman. Our online editor is Gabriel Cohen. Our interns are June Stinson, Ali Tabatabai, Harry Gregory, and Leanne Lucetta. The producer is Victoria Malion. Pat Flynn edited our story on foreclosed homes. The senior producer is Ingrid Becker. Our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Rachel Myra. Scott Schaefer returns next week. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the Wesley Foundation for coverage of immigration issues throughout California, the California Teachers Association, because every child deserves a chance to learn and no child succeeds alone. More information is available at cta.org, and the California Healthcare Foundation and Cal Hospital Compare, rating hospital quality in California. On the web at calhospitalcompare.org.